Okay, I'm gonna get started. Find your seats, please. Okay, so we have a great technological advance. They found me these steps, so hopefully I can reach the top of the board, which means I'll write bigger and you'll be able to see even from the back of the room. But let me just warn you, I tend when I start concentrating to write smaller and smaller. So if my handwriting gets too small and you can't see it, just yell out, write bigger, and that'll remind me that I should do it. Okay, so last time we began by asking ourselves, what did we mean by physics? And I told you that physics was the study of objects in our universe and the forces that determine how they behave. We saw that physicists describe the world in terms of very simple laws, and they have their own language, but it's a language you guys have seen before, even if you didn't know it was physics language. So we talk about the properties of objects and events in terms of mass, length, and time. And as far as physics 8A goes, those are the only fundamental units you need. In 8B, you'll also learn about electric charge, but we can forget that until next semester. Okay. Then in addition to that, there's a whole mathematical way we describe things. We're going to describe the world in terms of equations, and that means you're going to have to use the algebra, trig, and calculus that you've learned. And we rely very heavily on graphs because that gives us a way of visualizing what these complicated equations mean. And that the standard set of units that we use are the SI units, which are meters, kilograms, and seconds. So once in a while in your problem set, you'll get things in feet or centimeters just to remind yourself that these aren't the only units. But the typical units we'll use are the SI units. Okay, so at the end of class last time, I told you a story about a woman waiting outside her house, waiting to be picked up, and she was pacing back and forth. And we devised a graph to describe her position as a function of time as she paced up and down the road. And I just wrote here the story that we used last time to remind you. And we talked about four stages. She left home, turned east, and walked for a while. Then she stopped for a while. Then she walked a little bit more. And then she turned around and went back. And we're going to continue with this picture today, and then in a few minutes we're going to make a more complicated picture of what the woman's doing when she gets a little more excited. And we're going to use these simple pictures in order to describe the concepts that we're going to use in physics. Now, some of you might say, my God, this is really baby stuff. Why is she going into these details? But I think it helps if we start with simple examples you all understand. So then when we get to the more complicated examples, you can separate the complicated math from the physics, and the physics is really going to be pretty much just simple, even when we get to three dimensions and more complicated problems. So the first thing to notice is when I talked about the woman walking, I talked about her speed, and I also talked about the direction. So I said she went half a meter per second in the eastward direction. And that brings us to the first physics concept that we're going to talk about, which is velocity. So velocity is a speed plus a direction. And since we're only talking about one-dimensional problems today, we can just say east or west. But next week, when we start talking about three-dimensional problems, when we talk about a direction, that direction is going to have three components, the x, the y, and the z component. So in general, when we talk about velocities, I'll put an arrow over it, which means it's a vector, to remind ourselves that it has three components. Today, I'm going to pretty much leave the vector off most of the time because we're only talking about one-dimensional problems. But it's important to remember that the speed isn't enough. We also have to know the direction. And a velocity really implicitly has both. So when we started off, we said we're going to call east the positive direction. So whenever she walks east, her velocity is positive. Whenever she walks west, her velocity is negative. So we can take the speeds from that above problem, and we can turn them into velocities just by knowing the directions. So in the first case, the speed was 0.5 meters per second, and the velocity is plus 0.5 meters per second because she's walking east. In the second case, the velocity is 0 because she's standing still. In the third case, the velocity is plus 1 meters per second because she's still walking east. And I can figure out it's 1 because she went from 6 to 10. So she went, basically she went from 1 meter to 5 meter, from 6 to 10, so that was 4 meters in 4 seconds. So her velocity was 1 meter per second. And in the fourth case, her velocity is minus 1 meter per second because she was walking in the opposite direction. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. So you can see from what I did implicitly, I was able to figure out the velocity by just saying how far did she walk divided by how much time was she walking, the same way you would do if you're trying to measure the speed of your car and you knew how many miles you'd gone. And that's fine as long as the velocity is constant. So we're going to stick for a couple more minutes with constant velocity, and then we'll ask what happens when the velocity isn't constant, and that will make life a little bit more difficult. Okay, so what I did implicitly is I said, if I know how far someone has traveled, and I know how long it's taken them to go there, then the velocity times the time tells me the distance. And that's the fundamental formula that we're going to start with. And whenever I say delta, what I implicitly mean by that is the final minus the initial. So the deltas are always final minus initial, which should be the same convention that you're used to from your calculus classes. Now, you can already see what these deltas, you can guess where I'm going to end up. I'm going to start turning these deltas into little d's and do derivatives, but it's going to take us a minute or two to get there. Okay. So the first thing is, in order to get there, we have to ask, what kind of velocity are we talking about? And physicists talk about two types of velocity. One's called the average velocity, and the other is the instantaneous. Now, I think the instantaneous velocity is the easier one to understand, because the instantaneous velocity is just the velocity at a given point in time. So usually we'll write it as v of t to make it clear that we're talking about it at a given point in time. So at any point in that graph, I can ask, how fast is the woman walking at that point of time? That will be the instantaneous velocity. The reason the average velocity is a little more complicated is the average velocity depends on an interval. It says, what's the average between time 1 and time 2? And what you get for that average depends on the times you choose, and sometimes it can look a little bit peculiar depending on what you pick as the times. And by the way, the book uses a bar over the V to mean average, and it doesn't in the book state the any kind of an index to tell you the beginning and the end time. So sometimes I'll just write V bar, sometimes I'll write V bar 2, 1 for final initial to make it clear what the time intervals are. But if I don't write that, then I'll say somewhere in the problem what it is. Okay, so to give you an example of why the average depends on the time, let's take our problem up there. And we can say, okay, at the starting point, suppose we ask about the interval t equals 0 to t equals 10 seconds. Where t equals 0, she was at home. At t equals 10 seconds, she was 5 meters away. So in that time, the average velocity, which I can get from the equation on that middle board there, is just delta x over delta t. So that's 5 meters divided by 10 seconds, because it took her 10 seconds to get there. So I get 0.5 meters per second as her average velocity. Now, suppose I instead ask for the interval t equals 0 to t equals 15 seconds. In that case, the average velocity, again, is delta x over delta t. But in this case, delta x is 0 because she started at home and she ended up at home. And so even though the t is 15, we get 0 meters per second. So that looks a bit peculiar, but that's just the way it is with averages. You have to just accept the fact that that's the case. Now, you'll get some problems on next week's homework where you do average velocities. But to be honest, most of the time, we're going to be worried about instantaneous velocities, because as you can see, the average is not usually a particularly useful quantity, because it doesn't tell you anything about what's happening at any point in time. It just tells you about the aggregate. Okay, so the second thing in this graph on the upper left board that we did that was pretty implicit is we were able to add together all the distances she traveled. And in one dimension, that's pretty trivial. If we want to know how far she traveled, we just add up how far she traveled in each of the little segments. Okay, so that means that we can write the total distance that she traveled is just equal to sum. I'm going to use j as my index. At first I wrote I, and then I realized it was confusing because I was the initial time. So j equals 1 to however many steps she's traveled times delta x of that step. Okay, so here we had four steps. You would just add up those. And if we write that out, each delta is just the final one for that step minus the initial one for that step. And you can see that the final one for one step and the initial one for the next step are the same. So we're just going to end up with that being the final one for the last step minus the initial one for the first step, and all the intermediate guys cancel out. Okay, so that looks pretty trivial. And you might say, why am I even bothering to do it? And the answer is, next week, when we get to three-dimensional problems where things can move in x, y, and z, we're going to have to be a lot more careful about how we do the addition, because if something moves in the x direction and something moves in the y direction, the total displacement isn't x plus y. You're going to have to use the Pythagorean theorem and use the square root of x squared plus y squared. So again, by starting off in one dimension, we get the concept, and then we'll have to do a little more math when we go to three dimensions. Okay, so if we take this and we use the problem we have, we could figure out the distances that we went. Okay, now this problem was pretty simple because she was always moving at constant velocity and it was just random numbers that I put in. But suppose instead of having her just pace back and forth, we change our problem a little bit so that this time a woman is going to go down the street and she's going to see her friend at the corner and she's going to want to try and get to her friend because she's afraid her friend's going to leave without her, and so she speeds up. So let's make a slightly more complicated problem where the woman changes her speed because she's speeding up as she goes. Question? So on the final board, okay, what it says on the final board is we had the sum from j equals 1 to n of x final sub j minus x initial sub j, and so that was equal to x final sub n minus x initial of the start.
What does j mean?
J is each step. So in this case, we had four steps, so j went from 1 to 4. Okay, so basically what we're saying is we want to know the total distance we travel. We count how much distance we went at each step, and we just add them together. And that's something you guys would do without ever thinking about it. So again, a lot of what we see in Physics 8A, you've already done all your life. We're just going to write it in a more mathematical form, and all I need to do is explain to you how to translate into math the stuff you've been doing in your head since you were about 10. Okay, so this next problem, we're saying the woman sees her friend and she's going to speed up. So first let me write a little table that says what the woman's speed looks like, and then we'll graph it out. So let me start by writing the interval of time. And then after that, I'm going to turn that into how long the time is. Then I'm going to say what's her velocity at that time. And then from the interval of time and the velocity, I can calculate how far she travels in that step, and then how far she's traveled total from the time she started. Okay, so we're going to do 1 second intervals. So the intervals of time will be from 0 to 1 second, 1 to 2 seconds, 2 to 3 seconds, 3 to 4 seconds, and 4 to 5 seconds. And so each delta t is going to be 1 because I picked them all to be the same, and all of those are seconds. Okay, so all the velocities are in meters per second, because velocity is a speed times a distance. And yep. So delta x, and that's in seconds. So I put in parentheses. It would, this is meters per second. Delta x sub I, so that's how far she traveled in this step. So this interval is called interval I. Let's make it j, so it's the same as it is on the last board. So let's make it delta x sub j. So this is the j that's going to go, in this case, from 1 to 5, because I have 5 steps. Okay, so we have the times, and now I'm going to tell you what her speed is in each of those 1 second intervals. So the first second, she's moving with a speed of 0.1 meters per second. The second step, 0.3 meters per second. The third step, 0.5 meters per second. The fourth step, 0.7. And the fifth step, 0.9 meters per second. So in that step, 1 second at 0.1 meters per second, she goes 0.1, and all of these delta x's are going to be in meters. This one, it's 1 second at 0.3, so she goes 0.3. And the same way we get 0.5, 0.7, and 0.9. So this is how far she travels in each of those five steps. Now, what I really want to know is how far is she from home? Okay, so she starts at home. So after 1 second, she's 1.1 meters away. Next one, she goes to 0.1 meters plus 0.3, so I get 0.4. Now, I start with 0.4. I add another 0.5. I get 0.9. I start with 0.9. I add a 0.7. I get 1.6. Then I add another 0.9, and I get 2.5. So at the end of the 5 seconds, she's 2.5 meters away. Okay, so let's now take what we wrote in that table and turn it into a graph, because again, it's much easier to visualize her motion once you get used to it when we put it in a graph. Okay, so again, we said we start our graph by drawing our axes. And when we draw our axes, we better label them. And we want to know how far she's traveled as a function of time. So the horizontal axis is time, and it's in seconds. And the total was 5. So I'm going to put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 units and label them. Now, on the vertical axis, I'm going to say how far did she go. And at the end, she's 2.5. So I better say this is her position. It's in meters. This I'm going to make 2.5. And let me divide that up. 0.5, 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5. Okay. Now we're going to just take that table and graph it up. And let me do it in another color so it's easier to see. So let's grab the yellow. Okay, so after 1 second, she's only gone 0.1 meters. So she's way down here. After 2 seconds, she's only gone 0.4 meters. After 3 seconds, she's gone 0.9. After 4 seconds, she's gone 1.6. And after 5 seconds, she's gone 2.5. So I can take those, and since she's going at a constant speed in each of these, I can just draw straight lines through all of them, because each of those segments corresponds to constant speed. And so that yellow curve describes her path. Now, the first thing you notice looking at that path is that for each point in time, she's going more and more distance. That's because we said her speed was increasing. So one of the things you'll get used to looking at these graphs in the future is you'll, by seeing whether they curve up, curve down, or whether they're linear, you'll be able to get some intuition. And after looking at a couple of graphs, you'll get used to it, and you'll be able to say, oh, that means she's accelerating. She's increasing her velocity because the graph is curving this way. If she were decreasing her velocity, the graph would curve the other way. So again, at the beginning, it takes some getting used to, but graphics is much easier than trying to look at that table and figure out what she's doing. Okay, so what I said, this one doesn't go, I'll have to use the next board. So what I said when I drew that curve is I was starting with a sort of simple case where each of those intervals, she still has a constant velocity. So if I wanted to get the total distance, what I did, and I did it when I made the graph, and now I'm just writing mathematically what I've already shown you, is the total distance she went is the sum. And again, it's a sum over j, where j is the number of steps. So in this case, there were 5 steps. And then each step, we take her velocity times the time, and that gives us the distance for that step. So this here is the delta x for step j. Now, I can write that this way. I can remind myself that the velocity is just the change in distance as a function of time times delta t. And so the delta t's cancel out, and we just get the delta x total. This is sum over the x's of all the steps, which pretty much looks like a tautology. Now, the reason this is an interesting thing to do is at the moment, we drew that graph that only had 5 intervals, and it looked really choppy because she kept changing her speed. Now, of course, if you were really speeding up and starting to run, you wouldn't do it that way. You wouldn't have that choppiness. If you were starting to run, you'd have a curve here that was smooth. And what we want to do is ask, what do we have to do to turn this choppy curve that I drew using those simple numbers into something that looks roughly the same but smooth and has a better chance of being how you would really run? So the answer is, well, the reason it looks choppy is because I have these big 1 second steps, and at the end of every 1 second step, I abruptly change my velocity. So suppose instead of having 1 second steps, I made steps that were a tenth of a second, and instead of having a change of 0.2 every time it changed by a second, I had 0.02 every tenth second. Then I'd still get lines, but those lines would approximate a curve more smoothly. So as I make more and more steps, then that choppy line is going to start to look like a smooth curve. And what we'd really like to do is take the case where the steps get really, really small, the number of steps gets bigger, but the number of steps gets bigger in such a way that the sum over all the steps continues to give me the total time that I'm going, and then I'll end up with a smooth curve. Okay, so that's the idea. Now, you guys probably already can figure out where I'm heading with this. What have you seen in the past where you take the number of steps and you make it larger and the size of the step smaller? What concept is that? Someone? Derivative, you got it. So you can guess that what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all those deltas and I'm going to turn it into a derivative. Okay, and so you've seen this in your math classes, although in the math classes, they don't always make it clear exactly what's going on. What they're doing is they're making the step small, so instead of having a curve that jumps around, it's completely smooth. So we take what we started with, which is delta x total, which is the sum over all of my steps. Times the difference in distance over the distance in time times the difference in time. And I'm going to turn it into a limit where each of the steps goes to zero size. Now, when the steps go to zero size, I'm going to need more steps. And so the number of steps that I need, if the total time to the end of my plot is called t, then if each of the steps is let me make this bigger because I can already hear you guys saying I can't read your handwriting. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the sum, j equals 1, and now the number of steps, instead of being 5, I have a lot more steps because each of the steps is getting smaller. The total time is t, so if each step has an interval delta t, I need capital T over delta t steps in order to get to delta t at the end of my time. So that's how many steps I'm taking. And then this again is delta x sub j by delta t sub j, delta t sub j. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take this limit and I'm going to stick it inside the sum. And now, this is where we're going to use our calculus. When you have the limit as delta t goes to 0 of delta x over delta t, then the thing inside the sum becomes dx by dt dt. And then the sum, what happens to a sum when I take the limit that the little pieces get smaller and smaller? Yeah. That's delta t of j. Okay. So someone, what happens when I take a sum? What does it turn into when I take that sum over lots of really small intervals? Somebody? Integral. You got it. So what I'm doing when I take the limit is my sum becomes an integral and my delta becomes t, becomes d's. Okay, so let's go to another board so we have some room here and look a little bit at what we've just done. Okay. So I have the integral of dx by dt dt. So the total distance that I've gone is equal to the integral. Now, what are the limits on my integral? We started at time 0, and we ended up at our final time, which I called capital T. And then I had dx by dt. Well, the change of x with t is the velocity. And this is what we really mean when we say the instantaneous velocity at time t. It's what we get for the velocity when we take the difference in distance over the distance and difference in time and have that time interval be so small that the velocity doesn't have a chance to change. So we can say, what's the velocity at that specific point in time? And then the delta t just became a dt. So what I've just proved to you is the way I get the total distance is I integrate the velocity as a function of time over time between 0 and t. Okay, so this looks like a formidable equation, but you actually have done that in your head many, many times. And this is the basic starting point for everything we're going to do. Okay, now, this will hold independent of how complicated our formula for velocity is. Most of the time in Physics 8A, we're going to talk about pretty simple problems. So we're going to talk about problems where the acceleration is constant. That means the velocity is changing by a constant amount. But this formula doesn't depend on that. As long as you keep it inside the integral, it's totally general. The problem is if I gave you some totally wacky formula for the velocity, you may or may not remember how to do the integral. So you might find that it's hard to solve. But if you had a computer, you could always solve it mathematically. So in principle, you know how to solve basically any problem. Okay, so if we take that problem we started with up there, and we want to express it this way, so the first thing we can say is, well, what does v of t look like? So let's look at that list of numbers up there. And you can see that v of t, every time I go up in t by 1 second, it changes by 0.2. And at t equals 0, we can say the velocity is 0. And if that's the case, then I can write v of t for our example. And our example is just that graph up, that table up there. V of t is just equal to 0.2 meters per second squared times the time. So let's check on the units. Velocity is always in meters per second because velocity is speed with a sign on it, and speed is always measured in distance per unit second. Time is in seconds, so if I take meters per second squared, multiply it by seconds, I get meters per second, so my units are okay. So this thing here that I just wrote out as 0.2 because that's what I calculated by looking at that table, that thing is actually what we would call the acceleration. So the acceleration tells you how fast the velocity is changing. Like velocity, acceleration has a sign. If the velocity is increasing, the acceleration increases. If the velocity is decreasing, the acceleration decreases, and that sometimes is called deceleration. But I usually just call it negative acceleration because it's less confusing. Okay, so acceleration is change in velocity with time. So the problem I gave you happened to be one where the acceleration was constant, and we could tell that because every second the velocity changed by the same amount of time. Okay. So now that we know this, we could plug that in and use that in order to figure out. So again, I keep forgetting that this guy doesn't have a step and the board doesn't work. Yep. Question? Go on. So the capital T just means how much time my whole interval is. So in this case, the capital T is 5 seconds. So remember, when I started, I said I had 5 intervals. They were each 1 second long, so the total time was 5 seconds. If I make my little interval smaller, I'm going to need to have more and more intervals, so I use up all the time. But the thing that stays the same is I know it's she's going to get to the end of her path after 5 seconds, because that's what I gave you. Okay. So the limits of the integral are always set by the time over which you're looking at the problem. And I just stuck in a T. I could have put in 5 there for this specific problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that I've given you the velocity as a function of time, suppose I, on a homework, asked you how far has she traveled, and I want to find out how far she's traveled at some point in between the times that I gave you, and for the smooth curve rather than this fake jerky one that I gave you. Well, that's easy because I already gave you the equation. Delta x total is equal to the integral of V of t is a function of t. And I told you that in this problem, that's 0.2 meters per second squared t dt. And this is between 0 and then this t we just said was the 5 seconds, if we want to know the total time to the end. Okay, so does anyone remember? So first of all, this guy in front's a constant. I can take it out of the integral because I can always pull constants out of the integral. Does anyone remember what the integral of t dt is? Good, t squared over 2. So I get the 0.2 meters per second squared coming out. The integral of t is t squared over 2, and I need to evaluate that between 0 and t equals 5 seconds. So then I get 0.2. Okay, and let me do that on the next board so that we have room here. Okay, so then what we get is delta x total is equal to 0.2 meters per second squared. Okay, and then I can take out the 1/2, and I'm going to get t squared final minus t squared initial. T squared final is 5 squared, so that's 25. T squared initial is 0 because the initial t was 0. So that gives me 0.1 meters per second squared because I divided the 0.2 by the 1/2 times 25. So that gives me 2.5, and this is seconds squared because I got it from a t squared. And so what I get is 2.5 meters, which you can see is the right answer. That's what I started with when I constructed the problem. Okay, so I constructed the problem with this jerky thing. Then I turned that jerky thing into something smooth, and I convinced myself that I didn't do anything wrong when I solved the problem because I got the right answer in the end. Okay, so that basically is how you solve problems if somebody gives you the velocity. And again, they can give you a more complicated form, and you'll have to do a little more work to do the integral. But there's no new physics beyond that as long as you're in one dimension. Okay, so now that we've done that, let's keep going. And let's ask ourselves, how about this acceleration? Okay, I told you what the acceleration was. What I said was the acceleration was the change in velocity as a function in time. Now, just like velocities, you can talk about average accelerations and instantaneous accelerations, but the averages don't really do you much good most of the time. What you really care about is what's the acceleration at any point in time. So let me just skip to the chase there. So we're going to say the acceleration at any point in time is going to be just like the velocity was the limit as the time interval went to 0 of the change of position with time. The acceleration is going to be the limit as the time interval goes to 0 of the change in velocity with time. Okay. That limit then becomes dv of t by dt. And I'm trying to be careful always to write the v of t to make it clear we're talking about the velocity at any point in time, and it will change depending on what time we're talking about. Okay. Now notice something else. We already said that the velocity itself was equal to dx by dt. So that means I can take my a of t and write it as d by dt of dx by dt. And that just becomes d squared x by dt squared. Okay, so I've just proved to you, if I say the acceleration is the change of velocity with time, the acceleration is the second derivative of the position with respect to time. And now that we found the position over there, as an exercise at home, take the formula for position on that middle board there, try differentiating it twice, and convince yourself that you get the acceleration back that we started with. Okay. Okay, good. So now we have a definition of acceleration. Now, I wanted to warn you about one thing about acceleration, because this is something that almost everybody gets confused about when they start thinking about it, is that they tend to worry about velocities rather than worrying about positions rather than worrying about velocities, and that really causes you headaches when you do acceleration. Acceleration is defined in terms of the change in velocity, not the change in speed. And depending on what direction you're moving, the signs can get a little funky. So in order to explain the signs to you, I think the easiest thing is to do a few examples so you can see what happens depending on the various signs you start with. Okay, so we're going to use acceleration. And let's go back to the form before we turned it into a derivative, the change in velocity as a function of time. So I'm going to give you what happens at t equals 0, what happens at t equals 1 second in terms of the velocity at. And then we're going to turn the velocity at these two points into what the acceleration is. Okay, so the four cases that I'm going to do is I'm going to do if the velocity is plus 10 meters per second at t equals 0 and is 0 at t equals 1 second. I'm going to do as the second case what happens if it's plus 10 meters per second and it's 20 meters per second at 1 second. Then I'm going to do minus 10 meters per second, 0, and minus 10 meters per second, and minus 20 meters per second. And in each case, let's ask ourselves what the acceleration is. Okay, so if I start at 10 meters per second and I end at 0, then delta V is final minus initial, so it's 0 minus 10, and this is in meters per second, okay, divided by, then we have 1 second. So what I get is minus 10 meters per second squared. So if I start going 10 meters per second and I end up at 0, I'm decelerating. That makes sense. You're slowing down, I'm decelerating. No one's going to have a problem with that. Now suppose I start at 20 meters per second. So I start at, I end at 20 meters per second. I start at 10 meters per second, my second example. Again, I have 1 second. 20 minus 10 is 10, so I get plus 10 meters per second squared. So again, that makes sense because I'm speeding up. I'm going from 20 meters, from 10 meters per second to 20. The acceleration is positive. No one's going to argue with that one either. The place where we're going to start seeing things that might make you scratch your head a little bit are these next two. So if I start at minus 10 meters per second and I end at 0, then I get 0 minus minus 10 meters per second divided by 1 second. Minus minus gives me a plus, so I guess plus 10 meters per second. If I start at minus 10 and I end up at minus 20, then I get minus 20 minus minus 10 meters per second divided by 1 second. So minus 20 plus 10 is equal to minus 10 meters per second. So again, the cases where you start with negative velocities, the signs on the acceleration, you have to get used to. Once you've done work for a little while doing this, you'll get comfortable with it. But if these signs look confusing to you, go home, do the math in your head, and convince yourself that this is correct. So if some meters per second squared, thank you. Okay. So again, if things have a positive velocity, if the velocity is increasing, they're accelerating. If the velocity is decreasing, they're decelerating or negative acceleration. If they have a negative velocity, then if it gets more negative, you have a negative acceleration. If it gets less negative, you have a positive acceleration. And it's exactly the signs you get if you just plug into that formula without thinking. If you think about it too much, it makes your head hurt until you're used to it, but just be careful. Remind yourself it's velocity and not speed that matters when you calculate the acceleration. Okay, so this basically defines the concepts that we're going to be using for the next few weeks. So what we're going to do next is we're going to figure out how to solve problems involving these quantities, and the rest of this time and next time, we'll talk about how you solve those problems in only one dimension, either x or y, but not worried about more than one dimension at a time. And then starting in the middle of class next time, we'll begin to ask what happens if we want to talk about the real world where I have three dimensions, x, y, and z. But before we do that, I think it makes sense to begin by asking what kind of problems is it that we're going to be seeing and how can we characterize those problems? Because whenever you're given a problem on a homework or a test, the first thing you should ask yourself is, what have I been given? The second thing you should ask yourself is, what do they want me to do? And then once you know what you're given and you know what they want you to do, then you can figure out which of the many things you've learned in class you're going to use in order to solve the problem. So there are two kinds of problems, so two categories of problems. And the fancy name for this is kinematics. So kinematics just means the study of things moving. Okay, and this is one-dimensional kinematics, since we're only talking about things going in one direction. So the first kind of problem we have, what you're given is, and let me give you the fancy words, and then we'll say what they mean, an object. Object just means a thing's trajectory. So a trajectory is just a fancy word for the path the object takes. So that graph I drew on the top there is the particle's trajectory, or the object's trajectory. It shows how it moves as a function of time. And then once you're given that, then the question that you want to know is, what is its velocity or its acceleration? So I give you x of t is a function of t, and I want to know about its velocity or its acceleration. The second kind of problem that you're given is a case where you're given the acceleration and something else. And the reason you need something else is, if you have the acceleration, if you don't know anything else, then depending on how the particle started out, you can get lots of different trajectories. So, for example, you might be given the starting position and velocity, or you might be given the position and velocity at the end, or you might be given the starting position and the ending position, but you'll be given enough information so that you have enough stuff to solve the problem. So given that acceleration and something else, you want to find the position or velocity at a given time. Okay. So the second set of problems, the reason they're important is one of the things we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this semester are forces. And what forces do is when you push on something, you change its motion. Changing its motion means you're making it accelerate. Because by definition, if you're changing its motion, you're changing its velocity. That means it's accelerating. So if I tell you about forces, I'm implicitly giving you the acceleration. And when we study Newton's laws, you'll see the equations that you get the acceleration out of the force. So in that case, once you know that acceleration, you want to ask, how's the particle going to move? So if I give you a ball and I say, drop it from here, and I want to know how far down does it go as a function of time, that's an example of the second half of the problem. And so everything we're going to do is really going to be categorized as to one of those two examples. And the first thing you should ask yourself is, which of these two cases is it that you're trying to solve? Because the technique will be different depending on which case you want to solve. Okay, so let's start with the first example. Because the first example is the easier of the two, because it's pretty much rote once you learned how to do it. The second ones are more complicated, and we'll spend a lot of time next class talking about those. So an example of the first one, let me give you an example problem and show you how we solve it. So we have a charged particle, electrically charged particle, in an electric field. And the only reason I'm putting a charged particle in an electric field is I want to give it some kind of an acceleration. And that's just a story to tell you around the acceleration. Okay? And it moves. And I'm going to tell you what its trajectory is. Okay, so I've been using x all the time, but just to remind you, x is just a symbol for the position. Let's say this charged particle moves up and down. So I'm going to call it y now. All the equations still hold with y's rather than x's because it's still one-dimensional motion. So what I'm going to say, grab the chalk, is that its position as a function of time, y of t, is 5 meters plus 7 meters per second times t minus 2 meters per second squared times t squared plus 1/2 meter per second cubed, it's a 1/2 times t cubed. Okay? And I just made that up. I made those numbers up, but I'm telling you, we're giving it some wacky force that makes it move that way. And I'm going to ask two questions, and we're going to solve for both of those. The first question is, what is the velocity at t equals 1 second? And then the second question is, what is the acceleration at t equals 2 seconds? Okay. So the first thing is, let's make sure that my units are right. Y is in meters. My first term is meters, so I'm fine. Second is meters per second times time, which is seconds, so that's fine. Third is meters per second squared times something that's in seconds squared, so that's fine. And the third is meters per second cubed times something that's seconds cubed, so that's fine. So I haven't dropped any terms. That's a sign of relief when you're on the blackboard. It's really easy to drop terms. But you guys are good. You yell at me when I do it, and keep doing that. Okay, so how are we going to figure out the velocity at 1 second? Any ideas of how we're going to start? Take the derivative. Good work. So what we said was that v of t, before we wrote it, was equal to dx by dt, but in this problem we're talking about y motion. So the velocity in the y direction is just dy of t by dt. And since I gave you the formula, you can just take the derivative. So the derivative of a constant is zero, so that 5 meters disappears because it drops out when you take the derivative. The second term is time. Take the derivative of t, you get a constant, so that's fine. The third term I had minus 2 meters per second squared, and then I have to take the derivative of t squared. That gives me 2t. And then the third term I had a, what was my sign on that one? Was it a plus or a minus? It was plus, so it's 7 meters per second times t, minus 2 meters per second times t squared, plus 1/2 meters per second cubed. And then I had a t cubed, so when I take that, I get 3t squared. Okay, so that tells me what the velocity is as a function of time. So at the velocity at 1 second, I get 7 meters per second minus 2 times 2 times 1. So that becomes minus 4 meters per second. And then the third one, I have 1/2 times 3 times 1 second. So I get plus 3/2 meters per second. And then all I have to do is add all of those together. 7 minus 4 is 3, which is equal to 6/2 plus 3/2 is 9/2 meters per second. And I'm done. That tells me what the velocity is at 1 second. And then we just have time before the end of class to do the same thing again to get the acceleration. What happened to what? Right, so it was 1 second, so I just plugged in 1 for t. Okay. So the s's are in seconds. When I have a meter per second cubed, each of the t is a second, so I get a t squared, so I end up with a meter per second by taking meters per second cubed times seconds squared. Okay? Okay, so now we want a of t, so we can get the acceleration after 2 seconds. So a of t is just dv of t by dt. I just calculated v of t, so I just take the differential again. When I take my v of t, now the 7 goes away because it doesn't have any time dependence. So the second term, I get 2 times 2 gives me 4 meters per second squared, and the derivative of t is 1. Then the next term I get plus, I have 3/2 meters per second cubed, and then that's the derivative of t squared, so that gives me 2t. Got it? People happy with my derivatives? No, hold on. Negative on the first one and a plus on the second one. Okay, so now at 2 seconds, we get A of 2 seconds is equal to 4 meters per second squared with a minus sign in front plus 3/2 meters per second cubed times 2 times 2 seconds. So that gives me 4 times 3/2. Let me make that a times to make it clear that it's not a dot. And that's a second, not a 5. So 2 times 2 gives me 4. Times 3/2 gives me 6. So 4 minus 4 plus 6 gives me 2 meters per second squared. So acceleration at 2 seconds is equal to 2 meters per second squared. Okay, so now we're done for today, but just let me review for you. In the first kind of problem, where you're given the trajectory, you're given its path as a function of time, those are the easy kind. Differentiate once for velocity, twice for acceleration, you're done. Next time, I'll go to the second one, which is the harder of the two kinds of problems to solve.